Economists are largely focused on numbers and data, and that makes sense, but statistics and figures don't necessarily grab the public's attention, and frankly, they can be hard to understand. They also don't go viral in the same way that relatable stories often do. Nobel Prize-winning economist Robert Shiller digs into that topic and its importance in his new book, Narrative Economics, How Stories Go Viral and Drive Major Economic Events, and he is with me. So, Robert, narrative economics has a nice ring to it. Can you describe what you mean by the term?
I think I'm adopting a new meaning. Narrative economics used to be economics presented in the form of a narrative, like a chronology of events for a financial crisis. But for me, narrative economics means the studying of popular narratives, not now, but that were out there, that went viral at times in the past when economic changes occurred, and to think of economic changes as substantially driven by changing narratives.
So it would seem to be a topic or a realm that would have a higher level of awareness the way you just described, considering how much of our daily lives are attached to having a job. Can we afford our mortgage? Can we afford that new car? Is this something that you think the public can come to understand? Do they sort of understand it already without being conscious of what the term is?
People everywhere, it's a human universal, love to talk. They love to tell stories. They especially like to gossip, to talk about either supreme failures or brilliant successes. They feel envious. They like narratives that inspire envy about people, human interests, heroes, celebrities. This is what fills conversations everywhere, always. And so, it spreads economic ideas. So if you were in a time of a financial crisis and you heard stories about other people having trouble, you know, they're not making ends meet, they lost their job, they didn't have enough savings, you may not say it. The narrative, however, inclines you to think, you know, we have better start saving money. This is an uncertain world. So they stop spending, and that makes the economic crisis worse.
Well, in the book, you use the example of the 1929 stock market crash and how there were a great number of suicides, or at least that was the perception. And that's been tied to the 1929 narrative, but not with the striking drop we saw in 1987. So it was really interesting how you juxtaposed those.
Yeah, most people have forgotten 1987, but October 19th, 1987 was the biggest one-day drop, over 22% in the Dow Jones Industrial Average in one day. That brought back all of 1929 again, but somehow it didn't stick. We saw 1929 really come back in popular narratives in 2009. Now, you'd think that that's an awful long time later. Does people still remember 1929? They sure do. They thought it was happening again. It forms a model for what, and the story of people jumping out of buildings suggests the gravity. Doesn't matter whether the story is true. You know, somebody, I'm sure, jumped out of a building, but not too many of them, actually.
Keeping sort of in the same vein for one more question related to 1929 versus 1987, the word how comes to mind for me. How do these particular narratives take hold? Have you seen a pattern with some of the things you've looked at for your book and some of the things you've looked into and read about to figure out why it is that some of these narratives have been so sustained? And one of the things that came to mind for me, actually, is how the stock market for many has been tied generally to how the overall economy is doing. The fact that on the 24/7 news networks, we always see the constant Dow scroll at the end of national newscasts, and the Dow was up or down today, blah, blah, blah. It's always like the cap at the end of a newscast. And the fact that that has sustained through all these decades, is there a how for you or a why?
Well, this is something that it takes more than one man to answer. I just had lunch yesterday with a professor from the Department of Comparative Literature here, and we were talking about just this question. That's what they do. It's a matter of story quality, and it's hard to pin down. It takes a certain kind of gift to be a good storyteller. But once you've launched it, it then can have a life of its own. Other people can tell the same story. But I'm thinking of some things that go way back. The Roman senator Cicero wrote a book on rhetoric, and it's amazing to me to see this there. He's advising you how to make speeches. He says, bring some visual imagery in, because that sticks in people's memories. He said that 2,000 years ago. Speakers know that you have to have some kind of color to your story, but it's an art form. It's something that economists don't like to talk about because we are not artists. We don't do that sort of thing.
Well, that brings to mind to me the word disconnect then. Is there a disconnect? I mean, obviously economists like yourself and others are certainly human beings, but because they're so tied into the data, how does that affect the narrative from the standpoint that the average person is probably thinking about the aspect of what the data mean to them in a very different way? Do you think that generally affects how narratives work or don't work?
Well, I think politicians are better at narratives than economists. Sorry.
That's for sure.
it's a special skill, and we don't select for it here. Economists are very aware that they want to be scientific, so they want to have solid data to back them up. But, you know, if I'm saying some narrative was viral, you know, we don't have any science to describe that. My book is substantially a call to do new kinds of research and to listen more to those people in the humanities departments, like historians also, who have a better sense of what might be driving change.
Robert, you mentioned a few minutes ago that politicians are better at the narrative than economists. And I've got to ask you about the current narrator we have in the White House when it comes especially to tariffs and trade and how there has been sort of such an up or down reaction to it as he sort of creates his own narrative, which is not necessarily a long-term narrative. It's day-to-day, sometimes week-to-week. How do you think that affects whether a narrative is embraced? Because it does seem like these are very, very short-term narratives the way that President Trump goes about it.
Well, you say short-term, but he's been doing it for 50 years.
Okay.
I did a search for newspaper articles, and they go back that far. But it wasn't until maybe 35 years ago that he was widely known as a rich man and elegant, flamboyant, rich billionaire. I don't know if they called him a billionaire yet, but practically there. So he does have a long-term focus, and it may be that to achieve stature, anything like his, you have to start out early and let your career bloom. But these short-term narratives you talk about are little throwaway lines that he tweets, and it's part of keeping his narrative alive, that you have to keep being in the public eye. Otherwise, the forgetting sets in. Forgetting is a very powerful force in economics, that people will remember something when it's thrust in their face and when they know everybody else is interested in it, so they can tell a story like that too. But if that doesn't continue, it will just fade away. There are lots of names that from 20, 30 years ago that people were talking about all the time, and now we'd have trouble remembering what they were or what they did.
All right, that is Nobel Prize winner Robert Shiller. His new book is Narrative Economics, How Stories Go Viral and Drive Major Economic Events. Robert, I can only hope this interview goes viral. Thanks so much for the conversation.
Okay, thank you. It was fun.
Take care. Bye-bye.